Not live. I know. And coming to you from the fabulous Sunset Strip in Hollywood, California, it's the Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Yay. This is episode 55.
Wow.
55, yes. Is it? Yay. See, I never even know. 55. We're welcoming McCall Sinnott. Today, we're going to get to speak to McCall. Yeah. I want to welcome back the beautiful Kathy St. George.
Hello.
And Dennis Olson's with us again today. And, of course, Maybelline. And it is Tuesday, the 18th. McCall and I know each other through our former 405 traffic reporter, Nicole Summerfield.
Woo, Nicole.
Yay. And I just spent 2 hours and a lot of dough in the dentist chair today.
We have the same dentist.
Yes.
Dr. Dang, right?
Amani is mine.
Oh.
They share the office or something. Right. Or different. Oh, she does different offices. Or different. Well, anyway, we love you, Nicole. Yay.
Hi, Nicole.
Love you, Nicole.
Do you go to the Brentwood office?
No.
Then she's there a couple days a week. So we have the same hygienist friend.
Yes.
It's good to not have secrets about your teeth.
Yeah.
It's really intimate. We share like
Nicole's a groovy.
Nicole's had her fingers in both of our mouths.
Yes, with those spy glasses
weird.
On.
Yeah.
But and Nicole, when I first moved to Los Angeles, and she denies this, but I had this big Buick station where I get the wood grain sides, which I still have, and a U-Haul on the back. And
nice.
The little building in West LA that I still live in, I pulled up the driveway and she was kind of like standing outside. And I go, hey, I'm your new neighbor, Bob Dean from Nashville, Tennessee.
Nice.
And I laid it on really thick. And she folded her arms and she went, like that. And turned around and went back inside her apartment.
That's
and she
awesome.
Says,
You're
she like, says, I did not.
Oh, we're going to be friends.
But then there was a house directly next door that a beautiful old house with lots and lots of trees that they were getting ready to tear down.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over and explored it together and kind of looted the garage and got some mementos. But that's how we've been best friends for 14 years here in Los Angeles. Before I forget, please, thank you all very, very much. I think we're at 7,500 subscribers on iTunes. We have just been picked up by iHeartRadio.
Nice.
Yes.
Woo.
And so please, y'all subscribe on iTunes, rate and review. Please subscribe to us on iHeartRadio so they know that we are a first-rate show with Sammy Junio producing and Joe White as our cinematographer. Is that how I refer to it?
Yeah.
Cinematographer.
Or you could even say DP if you
DP.
Want to be fancy about
Depeche
it.
Depeche Mode. Oh, wait, that's Depeche DM. No, but anyway, seriously, we're really, really proud. And Zach Herndon in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Zach. Who was it with the original cast, but he puts everything on my website, BobTheSurlyComic.com. Oh, you can also watch us on YouTube.
Wow.
So please spread the word.
All over the web and everything.
Yes. And everybody who's anybody watches and listens to The Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Okay. Let's see. I will be at the Laugh Factory, God willing, on October 1st. That's a Monday night. Please let me know if you'd like to come and I'll put you at the door. Those locals. and let's see what else I'm doing. Not much except getting a lot of damn dental work done. It's expensive. So please feel free to send money.
Yeah.
Do people send money sometimes?
No.
Okay.
Soupy Sales. Do you remember that? Do you know who Soupy Sales was?
Yes, I do.
Well, Soupy Sales was he was like this comedic, like Jerry Lewis kind of actor for kids in the 50s and into the 60s. And he had the Soupy Sales show. And I guess it was
What was the name of the
puppet? I don't remember.
I can't either.
But in one episode, he told all the kids to go to their parents' wallets and purses and put money in an envelope and send it to them.
And they did?
And they did. And then he was immediately discharged. The Soupy Sales show, Okay. So let's see. What else? Hopefully today we're going to make some time to play Just Jump, our Amy Vanderbilt etiquette game. Which you'll learn about later.
All right,
my Novocaine is starting to wear off, everybody.
No, I like it.
It really is. So now let's get down to you. McCall Sinnott.
Yeah, you got it.
So tell us about you. Where are you from?
I'm from coastal Virginia, Norfolk.
Oh.
Virginia Beach area.
Nobody's getting any of your family okay with a storm and everything like that?
Yeah. Far up? Everyone's fine. It hit more of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And My husband's driving through there right now, actually, but it's still okay. There's signs that say up, like, do not enter North Carolina. He was telling me earlier. There were signs up, and I was like, oh.
Well, the thing about
I'm going in anyway.
But the flooding is, even after the hardcore of the storm, the water's still coming up.
Yeah.
And those of you that know that I've mentioned it many, many times, I lost a home in the flood in Nashville 8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's no joke. Yeah. And that's what happens is the water, even after all these few days, the water that still has nowhere to go, so it just keeps coming up. Ugh. So God bless our friends in North and South Carolina.
Yeah.
Hang in there. Anyway, so you're married, I take it then?
I am married.
How long have you been married?
Oh, gosh, like over a decade.
Really?
Long time, yeah.
Tell us about your husband.
He's
in the business, in the industry too?
Not real, kind of. We're working on a couple scripts together. Like, I think at some point he'll be in the industry, but he's not really. I mean, he's a very gifted writer, but he has a full-time job working as a production manager for a court reporting firm.
Oh.
it's like this. Basically, like, yeah. He deals with, depositions before they go, like pre-trial, when like one billionaire is suing another billionaire company, and like,
so that means he has to wear a suit to work every day.
No, he works remotely.
Lucky dog.
Yeah, so we like figured it out. So we both are bi-coastal. We have a house in New York and an apartment here, and we just like he works.
And his first name is
Joseph.
Hey Joseph.
Hey Joe.
From the Bob Dean Show. Yay! Your wife is lovely.
Aw, thanks.
What was your earliest? Now, I've been looking over your IMDb, and you've been in so many cool things.
Thanks.
And especially, well, of course, Law & Order, which is one of my absolute favorite shows.
Law & Order is fun. It's like a rite of passage, I think, as a New York actor.
Yeah, you know? Seriously.
Because it's like you're not legit.
We've had Rocky Carroll was on last week.
Oh, okay.
From NCIS. No,
oh,
not,
yeah,
was he on last week? Or the week before? No, he was on 2 weeks ago. We had John Welpley and Anson Williams. John Welpley is a very celebrated screenwriter, and Anson Williams is Potsy on Happy Days.
Oh, wow.
And also, but also, there's so much more to him. He's got to be up on the show. But before that, we had Rocky Carroll from NCIS. He has been on Law & Order as well. And then 3 weeks before, we had Nicholas Coster, who has been in everything, and he was like the lead villain. I see you've been in a lot of soaps.
Yeah, I mean, well, I had a recurring on My Life to Live.
Well, so, yeah, but yeah. Nicholas Coster
was
the he was a villain on so many
show.
Of these, but he was also on it. So there's 6 degrees of separation. You always find somebody interesting.
That's true.
On the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah. This whole unenthusiasm thing is very hard for me. I'll work on it.
Well, we're very enthused around here, but I just think it's kind of hokey.
It's super funny.
Now, when you're from Virginia Beach area, how did you know what?
You are?
I was born in Norfolk.
What?
Yeah.
What are the chances? Oh, wow. Where?
She knows somebody has something to do with every guest on this show. Go ahead.
That's so
I was born
amazing.
In Norfolk, Virginia, yeah.
What?
And I lived in Virginia Beach. So
wow. What part? What part?
Well, I don't, you know, because I was so little. My mom, my father was in the service.
Oh,
you know.
Of course. Yeah. Military.
And, so it's hard. I just actually was back there for the first time.
Oh, that's
so
neat.
Yeah. In North Carolina, because I didn't see my family for a long time. But
oh, that's neat.
Yeah. Because my mom moved to Los Angeles
and
with her new husband and that sort of thing. You know, so
it's a nice area.
I love it. I remember catching fireflies when I was little.
Yes. Fireflies are magic. They don't have them out here.
I know.
No.
I
no,
love that.
It is. They're neat. I have early memories of that too, because we moved there when I was like 5. So, yeah.
And at what point did you come to Los Angeles? What was your first role? I mean, and how did you get into the business?
Were you
like Shirley Temple tap dancing or?
Not quite. I'm a horrible tapper, actually. I went to a performing arts high school and we were required to take tap, and it was like the only C I got in high school was a tap. And it was honestly like my teacher gave it to me because she was like, McCall, you try so hard, so I'm going
to
give you a C.
Have to have
she really should have flunked me. I was the worst tapper. I have like 2 left feet. So yeah, so there's that. But my mom has her master's in theater, and so I actually did my first commercial with my mom. It was like a local commercial for the Family Channel when I was 7.
Well, that's great.
I don't know. They needed a 4-year-old, and my mom was like, well, I have a 7-year-old. And they were like, bring her along.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
That's
and I was
great.
Super shy when I was little, but it kind of like brought me out of my shell. And I was like, I really like being other people.
Right. That's what I love about it,
I'm way more comfortable in someone else's skin. Let me just be an actor.
And you're in that way they call it. What's your age range? I mean, now mine is between 55 and 70.
Mine now?
No. Mine is.
Yeah, no.
So I'm saying when she took you to the commercial, they wanted a 4-year-old and you were 7, but you still fit that category.
True.
You know, that,
maybe,
the range.
Like, I know one of my nicknames when I was little was Paper Doll McCall. So
that's
maybe,
cute.
Yeah, it was like this very little, you know, like kind of like a beanpole. So I suppose, yeah, so I suppose maybe I looked younger than 7.
I was 39 pounds when I was 9.
Whoa.
So I was really, so the same thing. It was like,
yeah.
39 pounds when you were
when
9 years old.
Yeah. I was 72 when I graduated high school.
That's little.
I was so little. Yeah, I know. Who knew?
I played
that I would blow up.
I played
your figure's hot. It's great, but
I was little.
That's super little because I know how much I weighed when I was like when I was 9 because I have a T-ball baseball card with my name and my stats on it and I was 50 pounds. So you were little.
I was really little.
Like
my tonsils were
blow
not so
away.
Good. My tonsils weren't very good, so they back then they kind of stunted your growth a little bit, which was okay.
What, when they took them out?
No, they were still in.
Well, mine are still in.
The extra 11 pounds I had in her was all tonsils.
But how did you not blow away? You were 90 pounds.
I was little. I was so
little. You could have been the, like, you know what? You could let, now I know what to compare it to.
That's what I know.
The flying nun, Sally Field, because she weighed 90 pounds.
No, Sally always went,
right,
catch the wind.
Right, but she weighed 90 pounds, and with that plus the coronet plus the wind shear, that's how she got to fly.
Well, you know what? I haven't flown yet, so I'm
so you and Sally Fields were the same.
But yeah, I get being small. You can play small. And most children that do commercials are older than the.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know what my range was when I was a kid, but I do know, yeah, when I first came to New York in my early 20s, I was still like playing 16-year-olds, you know, mm-hmm. So
you went from Virginia to New York to start?
Yeah, I did. I started in New York, yeah.
And mostly theater or soaps? What was the first age that you were cast in a soap opera?
I was
approximately
like in my mid 20s. Yeah. I booked Law and Order in like a couple months at a drama school.
Love
in New
that
York.
Show.
Yeah. I got lucky. I got an agent out of like my conservatory. And then like 2 months later, I got my equity card and I've never told anyone this. It's like a big secret. I got my equity card by doing this show on Ellis Island. So I played like 7 different characters on Ellis Island. I would play like the Statue of Liberty and like a Russian and a Italian. It was like all these different immigrants. So I would like change accents like every few minutes.
Wow.
And we did the show 7 times a day. It was like a 20-minute tourist show. So it took I got this audition for Law and Order and I was like, I'm going to book this. And it was like a guest star and it was like, I was going to be on all week. And the callback was during the time when I was on the show and because it was a day play and I was like, I'm going to get out of this. So I like faked a UTI and went to the callback and I got the part.
Yeah. They lost some immigrants. They lost immigrants that day.
That's right.
But like I've never said that out loud. Like I've
and
told,
you heard
told
it first
people,
on the Bobby show. Yay. Oh, that's cool though. But seriously,
I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do for your
listen,
part. You know what I mean?
It worked out, didn't it?
It's all
about the risk.
Changes every 20 minutes.
I mean, that was great. I was super happy to get my equity card, but I just needed to book that Law and Order, and I did. So
that's
that.
Great. And that started you on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, that was like, that was like my, I don't know, foray into television in New York.
You didn't get murdered in the episode, did you?
Oh, of course I did. I'm like, yeah, that's.
You got
I'll guess stars too.
Are you kidding? When you look like me, that's what happens to you. You get
murdered.
How did
murdered. You go? How did they off you?
Scissor wound to the neck. But I was alive first. You wasn't just dead. You got to see me alive, which was, you know.
Yeah.
You were at the body at the
you
beginning.
You were the first.
So it was criminal intent, and what they do is they like you. They see you. You see them in the beginning, and then you see them murdered, and then they spend the whole time like figuring it out. So it's like it's all. It's like you get your moment of glory, and then it's all about you, but you're dead. So that's, you know.
Yeah, but still, that's really cool.
It was with Judd Hirsch and Anthony Mackie, so that was kind of fun.
Well, Melissa Hardigay is on. Not ICU.
No, she's on Special Victims Unit.
I met her mother night at my bar where I sling drinks to pay. I'm an actor and a comedian, which means I'm a bartender.
Mariska Hargitay?
Yeah, her mother.
Her mother died.
Really?
Yeah, her mother has been dead a long time.
Well, then this woman straight
out
lied to me.
She was a total imposter. That's crazy.
I'm not kidding, and I'm embarrassed, and I apologize.
Jay Mansfield. was Mariska's mother.
This is awkward.
Your stepmother.
Mother's stepmother.
There you
stepmother.
Go.
Okay.
Because she was married to Mickey Hartigay.
Oh, that's it. She was
so
a
now I've got it right.
Your, okay,
her
sorry.
Stepmom.
Okay.
No, sis, but thank you because I, you know, yeah. I don't want to get – but because the woman was lovely and, and she said my daughter's been on Law & Order for 20 seasons. And I was like, oh,
wow.
My God. Because I just
favorite.
Love – I love every
She's
character
wonderful.
From every genre of the show.
Yeah.
They're all great.
Yeah, it's a good series. It really is.
And her brother – if you drive down Fountain past La Brea, there's a beautiful plant place right on the side. Mm-hmm. That's her brother, Mickey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I buy all my plants from him.
Well, okay, so her mother was Jane Mansfield.
Jane Mansfield, yes.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. I, maybe somewhere along, because Jane Mansfield was, of course, the way she went was just horrible.
I got to visit her when I was seven.
To the neck?
She was decapitated.
Oh, God, that's even worse.
In a convertible accident.
What? Yeah. Oh,
was
okay.
In the front seat.
I mean, that's not okay, but like, no. It's, I thought you meant like by a person.
No, but seriously.
The scarf that was around her neck got caught
in
the spokes.
No, it did not.
That was Isadora Duncan.
You
were making that up.
No.
Oh.
No, you just
saw
that. You got confused. Okay, Isadora Duncan got off when her scarf got stuck and it snapped her.
Isadora Duncan, was she a ballet?
She was like a ballet dancer or something in the 20s or in the early 30s. But then Jane Mansfield, and the thing that was so cool about Jane Mansfield is that she pushed and pushed and pushed. She never became quite the star that many are, that her own daughter even is. But she was such a – she was like that woman, the blonde that promotes
herself.
She's
that famous shot where it shows Sophia Loren staring. There's a shot where Sophia Loren is looking at this blonde woman. It's a famous shot. And she's looking at this woman's breast.
It's a classic. Sophia Loren's looking with disstain like – and Jane Mansfield. It's like some Hollywood
nightclub. An Italian movie?
No.
She's in The Girl Can't Help It.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. But
this still photo came from some nightclub somewhere.
Got it.
I'll show it to you.
Okay, I look forward to seeing
it. But Jane Mansfield used to like fall into pools, you know, like allegedly get pushed into pools and crash parties and that sort of thing.
She was a wild woman.
If you drive Sunset, if you drive Sunset, the big pink house that was up on right up on the hill there, that was hers, and Engelbert Humperdinck bought it after that. And I remember going to the
house.
I know. I don't know if it's pink now, but it was when he had it. And I went up there, and she haunts the house.
Does
they
she really?
Smell her rose water in the house. Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
How did Jane Mansfield die? Just a regular car crash?
And two children haunt the house,
She was in, I believe it was a 1964 Buick convertible. And she and two people involved in her – in something – some project they were doing. I'm sorry. I don't know. Google it, somebody. But they went under a truck or a crane or something.
Yeah, a crane. I think it was a crane. Somehow.
That was her telling me to stop talking about her.
There you go.
But St. George.
Respect the dead and move
now,
forward.
Now, Kathy St. George, of course,
especially
may have told
in LA.
You she was
–
Right?
She is our Miss August of 83.
Two.
But the point is that she is so well connected with so many really cool people in Los Angeles.
But I lived in – I mean, I didn't really – advertise that so much when I lived in New York.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of
My point being is that you always have some – that's why so many of the guests that have been on the show, you have some sort of 6 degrees of separation, whether it be knowing them or a topic or partying
or
with them.
Or from the same town.
And from living in New York.
Yeah.
I know. Well, how often does that happen? Norfolk.
Norfolk.
We don't smoke. We don't drink.
Norfolk.
It's just like it's Nashville. Nashville. It's not Nashville. It's Nashville.
Nashville.
Okay. Then you went on. Okay. Tell us about Grand Theft Auto for our audience that isn't familiar with it. Teach us.
I'm one of the main characters in Grand Theft Auto 5, which is the last one that they, you know, they're probably in a couple more years, they'll have a new one, but it takes about 5 years for them to come out because it takes 5 years to make. So I worked on that for 3 years. It was it was a big project. And I'm the daughter of the main crime boss. Her name is Tracy DeSanta. And so it's performance capture. So it's like the suits with the balls, and then you wear this like head helmet that has these long prongs coming out of it with like a pinhole camera that catches all your facial gestures. And then they pixelate your performance into animated form. So
that is so cool.
It's kind of crazy. It's really cool. And so when you started working on it, like, you know, you there's a screen up at the top where you can kind of see, it's like these weird robots that are like doing your gestures like a second after you do it. So it's like you'll be like, if I move my arm like this, and it'll go, but eventually that robot up at the top starts to look like you because like they digitize it.
Wait,
with animators.
This is fascinating. Okay, so when you and the people that are involved in your scene,
yeah,
are you standing?
Yeah.
And you've got your head, you know, headgear, and you're speaking into a microphone.
No, you wear a mic pack. So, okay. So basically, it's kind of like a weird,
like theater.
Hybrid. Yes, it's
like
a hybrid of like soap, theater, green screen. And you perform in a soundstage with 36 cameras that capture your movement. So before you go on set, you have to go into this room where you do like basically yoga, and you're like, they're like, okay, put your arms out. Okay, bend over. Like, okay, put your left hand out. So it's basically everyone does the same movements because there's slight variations in everyone's movements. So it calculates those differences. And then when you get into the sound studio, the 36 cameras they are basically recording. They take that data from when you did the calisthenics in the other room and they transfer it into the 36 cameras, who then capture the balls, like work with light to capture the movement. I don't know. Yeah, and that sounds so unscientific, but that's the best way I can kind of explain it.
Yeah.
And then, so then it basically creates like this version of the way you move. And then the animators use that when they, you know, transfer that into your body. And then you also, they do like a body scan. So it's basically like capturing the way you look. And then when you're there, it's capturing, there's like this pinhole, almost like a fisheye lens on your face. And so then it captures your facial gestures, and then you have a sound pack on that's recording your voice. So sometimes you have to go back and do some APR work, some ADR work to like catch things that they might not have caught. But for the most part, they're capturing in three different forms of data, your movement, your face, and your voice all at the same time.
Do they attach anything to the face, like the balls on the body?
They don't. They used to. I did a video game that never came out. It was called Ride to Hell. And with Stephen Ogg, who plays Trevor on that show, he played like my you're a fan, aren't you? I'm not allowed to talk to I'm only supposed to talk to you guys,
no, or am I allowed? Okay. Talk to anybody, please.
You were so quiet. I wasn't sure.
We are all one on the Bob Bean show.
When I did that video game, there were they did put the balls
marks
on my face.
Yeah, okay, but now
but
it's
the
just
technology
pure face.
Had advanced by the time I did Grand Theft Auto. It even advanced as I was doing it. So sometimes I would come on set because there would be like months in between shooting sometimes. And you get back on set and you'd be like, what is this new toy? Like there'd be things that were not even there when we started because it was at the cutting edge of the technology. So GTA 5 like basically set the stage for like everything that's happening right now in the video game world.
Have you guys ever worked with anything like that?
No.
I'm talking to my tech crew back.
Games, but that's it.
Now, so in other words, all these other, like the other ones where the soldiers are, you know, and there's like many, many of them, they're doing the same kind of work.
Yeah, they have there were a thousand actors that worked on Grand Theft Auto.
Holy crap.
Yeah. For all the crowd scenes and like, I mean, there's just, they used real people for all of those roles.
It's gotta be so expensive.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, but they made, okay. So that game was made for about $260 million. And in the first 3 days, it made $1 billion. It made its first billion the first three
days. That's nice.
And then it's made like over $3 billion now at this point. So at the time when it came out, it was the fastest grossing entertainment property of all time. It had like seven world records.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. There were billboards of my character in Times Square. It was crazy. And it's like, I mean, it's
Tracy DeSanta.
Tracy DeSanta.
I'm going to tell everybody I know that we interviewed Tracy DeSanta on the Bobby Joe.
DeSanta.
Where are the studios located? Here in Los Angeles or New York?
They're in New York for the most part. I mean, they're kind of all over. It's actually an Edinburgh company. So like the animators and a lot of the technicians are coming out of the UK, and then most of the main actors are coming out of New York, but then they do some work in LA. Like I did do, you know, I came back and did ADR work in LA, but for most of my stuff was shot in New York.
Did you like audition for this? Just like a regular
call?
I did.
Yeah. It was an audition through my agents and just got lucky.
They need some fat old bitter dude to do something.
I mean, there's all kinds of people in the show, you know.
But like, that's just fascinating that the procedure on how they did it. I never even thought about it.
Yeah, it is fascinating.
No idea.
It was big education because I'm not, I'm really not a gamer. I mean, my gaming stopped when I was like in elementary school playing like Super Mario Brothers and, you know, that kind of thing. So,
well, I'm going to have to go out and get this product just so I can check you out.
Okay.
Seriously. Well, now that was what you said a couple years ago was when
you finished that project? Yeah, it came out in 2013. So it was like 5 years ago now.
Well, do you have anything coming up? Are you doing anything interesting right now?
Yeah, I am. I'm producing a film I wrote and that I'll be in. It's called Born That Way.
Born That Way.
I have a team of about 25 people, which is kind of exciting. I raised the first $50,000 last year. So not, you know, but it, like I raised
job.
It. Thanks.
Congratulations.
And I have an amazing producer that took a film to Sundance called Band-Aid last year. Her name is Kristen Murtha, and so she's my lead producer on it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the storyline?
Yeah. I call it a magical realist present day fable for the people. And about a tenth of it is in animation. So it lives in the world of like Diary of a Teenage Girl or Run Lola Run or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It has this sort of magical realism element to it. When I play this character named Sophie, who grew up in Tanzania, she was a child of missionary parents to the Maasai. So she's like the only white girl in this Maasai village, and she was like the outsider. And now she lives in New York City, and she's become this very cloistered, misanthropic artist. And she crashes her bike in Washington Square Park in the beginning of the film into two people. A guy named Daniel, who is a black New York City councilman with a secret, and a woman named Jill, who is a white country singer who's come from Mississippi in search of her father.
Oh.
And she crashes into these two people simultaneously but separately, at which point the world splits, and it becomes this unconventional love story between Sophie and Daniel and Sophie and Jill. And you start to realize that Daniel and Jill are the same soul in two different possibilities for life. So what if you were born into my life? How would you be different?
You're asking me now?
Well, I'm just – I mean –
because I'm already so – I'm trying to process how cool the story is already.
Thank you. So it's really? Dealing with a lot of consciousness questions about race and gender and sexuality and all these things that separate us, right? All these identity questions. That
but
like
then there's
we're
the
all,
oversoul that we're all descending in.
That's right.
Right.
So it's about our connection. You know, it's about our connectedness.
Cool.
And it's dealing with a lot of like our lost connection to the earth and to animals and you know, just like how we're kind of –
that's going to really be good.
Thank you. I want it to be the next Moonlight. I think it has the potential to.
When can we expect to see this?
We're making attachments right now. We just made an offer on Friday to someone. I can't say who, but we're making another offer tomorrow to someone. And as soon as we attach an actor, you know, then we're going to go after the rest of financing. And hopefully we'll shoot in the spring.
New York?
Yes, it's a New York story. We shot in Tanzania last summer, so we already did that part of production. And we have amazing footage. We shot drone. My initial investors are drone photographers. So a drone company called Dyna Drones invested in the project. And we went to Tanzania with them and shot like beautiful National Geographic level footage. Mm-hmm. And that'll be like the opening scene. So it's like very – like the total contrast between like the Maasai lived basically the same way they have for the last 2,000 years. So like this total timelessness contrasted with like beeping cars in New York City and like the fast pace, sort of like this like lost Eden, you know, that
just
we kind
so
of
exciting.
Live in now. So yeah, so if we can shoot in the spring, I think it's possible that we could be edited and possibly be able to submit it for Sundance for 2020. That's like my goal.
Congratulations.
Great.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I was reading
we'll
about it on Google because it was saying
thanks.
That you had a new project coming
yeah. out. So yeah, that's I put most – that's where my most of my energy goes to these days. I'm, you know, I'm one
and
of the
Lord knows you have a lot of it.
Oh, thanks.
I mean that with the highest form of flattery. Oh. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited about it. I wrote it with my best friend. Her name is Mary Parr, and we wrote it like on a 6-day cross-country road trip from LA or from New York to LA. And we were like, let's write a project for ourselves. And I don't know why we had to write something so complicated, but we did. And and so we wrote this thing, and now it's really kind of finally finding its wings. So
oh, that's sounds awesome. Amazing. You must be
thank
very
you.
Proud.
I am proud of it.
You should
yeah,
be.
Yeah, really. Thank you. Thanks a lot. It's yeah, I don't know. It's I feel like it's a I think it's an important story. I feel like it's a good it's a story for, you know, right now. It's very
well, I can
of
tell
the
you
moment.
Right now that once this becomes a success that it's destined to be.
Oh, thanks.
You can come back on the show and we can talk more about it.
Okay.
You okay?
That'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
Thanks.
And this, I mean, to write and then go through the whole process of everything from writing it to funding it. To the beginning stages before you can sell it.
Yeah, it's a big
that's
education.
That's a lot of nerve wracking too, isn't it?
It's
a lot
you know,
of nail biting.
I think that it's been really good for me because it's like, you know, I think when you there's nothing like the artistic process to be like this wall that you're constantly hitting where you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to go back to myself and figure out why I'm not getting what I want. You know, like, so I don't know. I just think it's like a good teacher. It's like a very hard thing to kind of pull off because I didn't come for money. And, you know, like just to figure out how to make this thing happen has been like, it's all, you know, will and also like,
and
I don't know,
in it too.
Belief yeah. And that sort of that and that extra thing where you're like connecting with other people and really mm-hmm. getting that message out there. I mean, to pitch it, I pitched it 1,000 times and it's like, you know, your pitch isn't that good in the beginning, but then eventually it's like it's good. And you mm-hmm. know when you're really connecting to someone. So it's, I don't know, it's a
well,
good teacher.
So in essence, Nicole would be our how you and I met.
In, yeah.
She would be
she's our connector.
Our connector.
That's right. Yeah.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks, Nicole. Yeah.
Well, so now back to now. What were there any particular shows that you've done in the past for television or stage or screen or whatever that really, really, really you loved doing? You had more, you know, you felt more fulfilled and had a good time. Is there anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. I got really lucky and got to do this show at the Whitney Museum
yeah,
of
yeah.
Art.
Mm-hmm.
And
I didn't know she had a museum. That's a line. That's a line from The Nanny. Anyway, go ahead.
I was a performance artist in this museum piece at the Whitney, and it was basically you wore a camera. So I wore this. They're called like. Oh, I'm going to totally screw this up. I think it's a snoggy cam. I think that's the word mm-hmm. for it. And you wear this camera around your waist, and it also juts out and like. Records your face. So it's kind of similar to when I was working on GTA, but it's it was an empty, like emptied out this room of the museum. And basically I was the museum piece. So there was like there were guards there making sure no one touched me.
Right, right.
But people would come in and observe me. And basically I was supposed to be in unrest, like some sort of like despair or like some sort of – there was something going on with me emotionally and it would record me. So then when I wasn't there, it would play on the screen. But you were in this space and it was the first time I've ever been – I didn't have anyone to act off of, you know. So I basically – it was like a solo piece and I wasn't the only actor that did it, but we all did it solo. There were 7 of us that mm-hmm. performed solo at different times. So like people could come and, you know, they knew like the schedule. They're like, oh, there's going to be a performer here from this time. And it was like 20 minutes. So it wasn't like – no, maybe it was like 40 minutes. It was like 40 minutes you were alone.
That's
like,
a lot.
And to keep mm-hmm. it fresh, I found that I had to – I basically started making a list of my fears and I just started tackling them. So it was like I just – and then I – this magic thing happened where I stopped being afraid of them. So – every time I would have, like, if I was like, oh, you know, let me talk about my relationship with my father, like, it would no longer work, like, in my head after, because I, like, worked it all out, like, by the time I was done with that particular session. So it was like this weird, like, I don't know. Therapy.
Yeah,
of
it's
sorts.
Like facing your fears and then
yeah,
they dissolve.
Exactly. And so I would, like, have these, like, emotional experience, you know, in, like, that was public, but it was internal. And sometimes people walk up to me like, I'm sorry. Like they talk to me or like they'd be like, it's going to be okay. And, but like like if they ever, like a couple times someone reached out and the guard was like, get off her! You know, like, these like New Yorkers, you know, that worked in museums.
Well, there's
like,
a lot of that kind of performance art going on now, isn't there, throughout New York?
Maybe, I don't know.
I mean, not so much as exactly like yours is, but I mean involving, and maybe there has been for a long time, involving, you know, live characters that entertain people throughout different rooms, you know.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I feel like it's, you know, the woman who created this piece, her name is Xavier Cha. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, she just It was really cool. I guess it just and I don't know, something about it's like
something about it just felt
so like, oh, this is super exciting, and it just was like a very, it was a big honor, and it was also really cool because the guards were like, you know, they're used to working like looking at a bunch of like fruit or like, I mean, not really. The Whitney's more exciting than that. Like that's the Met, you know, but you know
or
what
rocks,
I mean? Like,
fruit
yeah,
or rocks.
Like, or like square shapes or, you know, like yeah. It's, yeah, like they, so they were like, we love you guys. You're alive. Like yeah. We are like real people that were the art, you know, that were part of the art. And that was just like a really neat experience.
That is really cool.
Yeah, it was.
It's like being, Marlo Thomas is a live mannequin in the beginning of that girl.
Oh, right. Is that mannequin or?
No. I guess they used to, I don't know if they still do, but.
Street performers?
Live. Well, not street performers, but.
Stand on a box and do the
No. In the department store window. They would use real people.
Oh, but they would, famous people?
No.
There's, okay.
Yeah, at the beginning of the show, that girl, which was way before y'all's time.
Not mine.
Well, there's one scene where she's just a beautiful woman standing in the
oh, you know, nice.
She's a struggling young actress.
Yeah.
And this is just one of the little things.
Yeah,
they
used to do things like that.
I used to love that show. When she rushed, she's got, I have to call my agent. I have to call my answering service to see if my agent called me.
Yeah, that's old school.
I remember when I had people as my answering service. I mean, people actually said that Kathy's, and they write your messages down. And I,
yeah, nice. That's what, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
it was
old
like,
school.
Are people, we have to like go to the agents and get the sides for the next day because this is like pre-email.
Oh, that reminds me. I have a theatrical audition tomorrow. Thank you.
Oh.
And I got to go home. I got to figure out a way to print out those damn sides.
What's it for?
But don't worry. I'll be there, Christina. It's for some play.
Okay. Nice.
But I already forgot, so I need to go and research that. Thank you. Do we have time, just a few minutes to play Just Jump? We don't want to play Just Jump. It's fun.
Okay.
What it is it's Dennis found this book. It's Amy Vanderbilt's 1957 Guide to Etiquette.
Oh, nice.
So he always pulls out a couple questions, and we as the panel see if we can come to the correct answer.
Okay.
Right? Because as you can see on the Bob Dean Show, time flies and we're almost out of time, but we have time to
That was quick.
I know. It's fun, isn't it? It
flies.
Thank you. Time flies when you're having fun.
You're a busy girl.
Oh, well, thank you.
Okay, Dennis, Mr. Olson.
All right. When ladies already seated at a luncheon table are introduced to each other, do they shake hands seated when they may conveniently do so?
Up, I think.
I'm only going from what I've watched.
Yeah. I think they do. I feel like I can picture that in an old movie. Like their limp hands, you know, like because they, you know, can't be too strong about it.
So you're saying, you two ladies are saying that you do stand?
No, I think they stay seated and give their limp hands.
I usually do it if I come in. If I meet somebody, I do it before I sit down. But they're seated.
So your answer is being the ladies.
The answer is no. They bow.
They bow.
Really? In this country, there is very little shaking hands between women, although the hostess always shakes hands with her guests, male and female. And anyone acting in the role of hostess, say a teacher at the school, would rise and shake hands with the visitors, women as well as men.
That's fucking curtsy. Awesome.
You learned that here, everybody. That's pretty interesting.
That's really interesting.
No more shaking hands, y'all. You need to bow when you're at the ladies.
I don't shake hands that much when I go to meet girls for
– Well, there's probably not as many ladies' luncheons as there used to be because everybody's working. Because it's so damn expensive.
Yeah, what happened to, you know, what is it? Sex in the City when you got to go to lunch all the time. This doesn't happen.
Let's have another question.
All right.
Please.
What do you think of the meaningless cliches that some people seem to adopt as trademarks? I'm thinking of such gems as goodbye now, you can say that again, like so, and out of this world. Don't you think this sort of thing sometimes gets out of hand?
Such a weird question.
I know.
I was just fixing to call you.
Yeah.
I would say, they're just like catchphrases that.
Yeah.
But the ones that she has pointed out in this thing are we still use them today.
I know. Huh?
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to go away.
For example, I know.
I know.
The answer is yes, I do. Up to a point, they can lend a little color to your conversation, but they can easily become second nature, so that you seem to be a person of little imagination, one suffering from sad poverty of language.
Wow.
These innocuous slang expressions sound particularly inept from a grown man or woman unless one is using them quite consciously and in fun.
Well, you know what? That would probably and the terms now would be like
awesome.
Awesome. Totally. No, but what is the one? Basically. That drives me crazy.
Oh, my sister. Basically, my niece says it all the
this
time.
Show is fun because basically we're all together.
Literally.
Basically, we get here and literally before rush hour. So, yeah,
literally,
yeah.
That's a big
and,
one. Okay,
when I lived on South Beach, and then we're gonna wrap it up. I know we gotta go. When I lived on South Beach, some 20 years ago when it was still cool, it was right.
Right.
And I think it was the same thing in Nashville. It would be like, so anyway, we were having so much fun, right? And
you know,
this car came along, right? And the person you're talking to is going, right, right.
Right.
Right, because you can smell, you know, right.
Also like.
Right?
In my generation, almost everyone says like now. It used to be just like a Valley Girl thing. And now, I mean, it's just like anyone,
and it just
anyone
the
under 40
gives you more time to think about what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Well, I think that if you really consciously work on it, you can overcome that because mm-hmm. if you've noticed, I hardly ever say the F word now.
Was that a big one for you?
Well, and my mother rolls over in her grave, and it's just because I've been in the bar business for a long time. And you know what I noticed too now when I'm listening to people talking, I'm talking obviously people of intelligence and means, and the F word just flows along in the conversation.
I really like cursing, but I think it's partially because I feel like people don't expect it from me. So it's like I'm going to be like, get the word and fuck that, you know, like I just want to put it out there, but I do. Yeah.
You're being Lakehurst.
Well, then on the closing note, I'm going to say this. Fuck you. Piss off and go to hell.
Oh,
Kathy.
My goodness. Oh, wow.
Mikhail, thank you so much for being here with
us. It was fun.
I hope that you will, please keep us put. Is there a website or anything? Anybody
can
follow
you? Yeah. BornThatWayTheMovie.com.
BornThatWayTheMovie.com.
Uh-huh. And they can follow all our, you know, Instagram and all the rest of that through there.
I look
as well.
Forward to seeing mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and we have a proof of concept that we released about a couple months ago that has 500,000 views. So.
That's awesome.
Yay. Exciting. Yeah.
Well, stick with us because we're going to let you, please. I know it's going to be a big success, and after
thank
it is,
you.
I hope you'll come back and tell us all
about
it.
Yeah, I'd love to. Okay.
Thank you. Listen, everybody. Thanks again for watching and listening to The Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Episode 55, I believe. 55, that's pretty cool, y'all.
That is pretty cool.
Thank you again. Please. And tell everybody that you know sitting next to you on the bus or an airplane or whatever to subscribe on iTunes, iHeartRadio now. Yay. Thank you. Watch on YouTube and you can also listen on BobTheSorrellyComic.com. God bless everybody in the flood zones. Good luck. And thank you. See you next week.
Bye.
Yay.
Yay.